Good morning and welcome to Neocon View. I'm Peter Newman. We are up Highway 53 and I guess it's, I was going to say north part of Tillamook County, but the road sign tells me we're in Clatsop County, just into Clatsop County. And our guest is Ginger Edwards of North Fork 53, which is so many things, Ginger, that I'm just going to have you explain all the very facets of this farm, among other things. And we should also mention we may hear the sound of machinery and all of that because this is a working building we're in. Mm-hmm. Welcome, Ginger.
Thank you for having me.
What is all this North Fork 53?
Well, North Fork 53 is the latest expansion of our farm, which is has been in, I guess, North Tillamook County. And yes, we are right in Clatsop County, so we consider ourselves part of both. We've been an organic vegetable farm here for 8 years. So last fall, we purchased a new piece of property that's adjacent to the farm, and we opened a farm stay bed and breakfast. And that's called North Fork 53. And it features a four-bedroom bed and breakfast and a large barn where we have a year-round farm store, so we could sell our vegetables year round, and then we could serve our vegetables to guests now who stay with us.
Normally, I like to stay away from, you know, plugging a commercial enterprise, but this is literally commercial, so low to the ground, literally so low to the ground that I don't think too many people would be offended. This is not a commercial. This is, we're going to talk farming and food and, you know, what it takes to run these kind of businesses here. That, you know, It's hard to make a living doing any of the above, and you're doing all of it.
Yeah, I think maybe the impetus came from trying to find the avenues for the food to reach the customer in the most direct way, and also to experience the farm-to-table aspect. So we have been the farm, and we were kind of looking for the table, like where can we seat people down and have that full monetary gain for the farm from the plate, but also just the experience of taking the food all the way to the final product.
So what kind of foods? Well, you were just saying just before we went on that you're getting the first batch of food for distribution from the farm.
So,
what's in the bag?
Yeah, so we do a CSA share for 55 families here on the coast. We deliver from Rockaway all the way up to Seaside. And this week we're having a box going out with radishes and Chinese cabbage and spinach and salad greens and kale and chard and beets and spring onions and green garlic and probably a few other things that I'm forgetting, but the spring vegetables. So it's pretty bountiful this time of year, and that's our very first box, and that just increases the diversity and weight of it as it goes forward. So we do 24 weeks, and we don't stop delivering until Halloween.
And I imagine all those things find themselves in some way to the menu.
Yes. The hope is that our menus are actually created from those. Just as if you had a CSA share, if you come to stay at the bed and breakfast, you're kind of getting the experience of what our chef does with the box that they get, which is coming directly from the farm as well.
It's got to be kind of foodie heaven for some people.
We like to think so. And we also offer a farm tour, and we're building gardens all around the bed and breakfast as well. So you could hopefully engage as much with the process of the seed to the plate as possible.
What's your background? How'd you get into this?
Well, I've been farming for 8 years. Before that, I was owning a little store in Manzanita, a little fair trade store. It's still there. Sold it to a friend of mine. It's called Moxino. And I'm originally from Detroit, Michigan, so I didn't grow up on a farm, and I didn't grow up in the country at all. I moved to Oregon in 98 and has always been interested in sustainability and trying to make the planet a better place to live. And that was kind of my passion that drove me towards local food and growing my own food. And really, it was just a passion that got out of control, and I just didn't want to do anything else. I just found farming at the age of 33, which is pretty late, I think, but I didn't really study with anyone. I just kind of dove from gardener to farmer, and it's been expanding ever since. So now it's, you know, we're doing, like you said, many hats. So not only am I the farmer, and I'm now managing a bed and breakfast, and we're doing events and tours and educational programs and all kinds of things. So,
well, when you were getting started, I mean, there's a number of things you can farm, both because people want those products, mm-hmm. and also because that's what grows here. So how do you work that? So you're both, you know, giving what people want at the same time, doing what you know is possible.
Yeah, the coast is actually a pretty amazing growing climate. I think that most people up here do dairy, and it's got a beautiful lush pastures. But for vegetables, it's a long temperate season. And so we started playing around with what grew here. And we found that with a little addition of a greenhouse here and there, you can really add the edges of those seasons out to produce a lot of things. We produce everything from hot peppers and to arugula and, like, you know, everything in between. So even eggplants, corn, things that people wouldn't associate with growing on the North Coast had been grown here historically. I mean, people grew a wide range of vegetables. It's just because the valley tends to be hotter that commercially those vegetables shifted away from the coast. But they do well here, and we really want to showcase our, you know, our coastal grown varieties. We really choosily select what likes our climate, and people eat seasonally. We don't have tomatoes until July. The valley might have them sooner, but we wait, you know, until ours are really perfect and ripe and ready to go. So we kind of enjoy the whole seasonal rotation of the coast, and it's a really late harvest. And this year we were able to go all year long in the farm store. So that was the first time we actually were able to supply local food the entire year, and we were really proud of that.
Is that because warmer winter?
It was because of a lot of really careful farm planning.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
We grew a lot of storage vegetables, and we also really planned carefully when to put those in, like last summer, just so we can get them over the winter into the spring. Yeah.
Our guest this morning on the Econi View is Ginger Edwards with North Fork 53 on Highway 53, just on the line between Clatsop and Tillamook County. I'm not talking necessarily to eat, but just in terms of satisfaction of growing. What's your favorite vegetable?
Oh, I think tomatoes would have to be the most satisfying thing to grow. They're delicious and amazing. They come in so many colors and varieties. I am guilty of growing up to 40 varieties of vegetables on my farm any given summer, just because I love looking at them, and I think they're absolutely beautiful. And lettuce would be my second one for almost the same reason. They grow up in so many colors and varieties and shapes and sizes, and most people in the grocery store see like the standard commercial three maybe, but heirloom vegetables are just like art, you know? I mean, they have that expression of all these people for generations saving seed, and it's just a beautiful thing to see. Outside of your own garden, the CSA is probably the most diversity you'll see in the vegetables, you know?
Well, when you were getting into this, as far as trying to deal with heirloom items, did you go hunt around for those special seeds?
I did. We try to do as much Oregon grown or Pacific Northwest grown. So we went to lots of conferences and went to a lot of farms and just kept talking to farmers and finding seeds and sourcing them as locally as possible in this region, because they grow well here. And now we have a seed saving group here in Nehalem, and we do a little seed exchange every spring, and that's been really nice for the farm to share our seeds that we save with the community, and also to get new seeds from other farmers and, you know, try them out.
Well, and then who are the customers? I mean, you talked about the local folk who you deliver to. They found out about you, I guess, and you found out about them, and it all worked out, right?
Yeah, I've lived here for almost 15 years, so I was here a little longer in the community before I started farming. I helped start the Manzanita Farmers Market as a venue to try to promote the farm and what we did, and that was great. So we had a market booth there first, and then we built our CSA kind of off of that. And now it's been really lovely because all of my customers pretty much stay on board. So our CSA just kind of rolls over, and we might pick up a few people here and there, but it's pretty much the same people has been with us for many years. And that's really rewarding because we get to hear stories of they feel better and their health is improving, and now their kids eat broccoli and all of these good things. As a farmer, that's the piece. If you're just commercially growing and shipping out, you never get that feedback, and it's just really lovely. And the bed and breakfast has been really great too, because we get the immediate feedback of, oh my gosh, I never thought I'd like kale until I tasted this kale. And it's true that vegetables taste a lot different when they're fresh and when they're organic. So I think it's been really fun to know our customers.
Now, I don't think you're not in the kitchen, right?
I'm not in the kitchen. That is one thing I cannot put a hat on and join in on, because I don't have that much time in my hands. But I did start in the fall. I was in the kitchen just to see what that job was and how it felt, and know, you know, what we were trying to put out there, and just get a whole feel for it. So sometimes I'm in the kitchen, but not usually.
So let's take broccoli, for example. Mm-hmm. What is the kitchen? What do you do with broccoli, or what does the chef do with broccoli?
Oh man, so broccoli is something we have in the box a lot. The coastal climate is ideal for that whole family of crops, including cabbage and cauliflower and broccoli. So broccoli is one of the more favorite American vegetables. Cauliflower is a little challenging, but it's gaining popularity. Broccoli is so easy, you can eat it raw. So that's one of the things we encourage people just to do. And if you want to dip it, you can, but you could also steam it, you could roast it, you can grill it, which is amazing. So in the summer, we go to grilled broccoli, which is just throwing on the grill and searing it on either side with a little bit of soy sauce and ginger. It's amazing. I'm getting hungry talking about broccoli. We're going to have broccoli in June, so it's coming.
Anything else like this around here? Do you have colleagues?
No, actually, we are the first. We don't know of anybody else doing this exact model nearby. There are people who do bed and breakfast, of course, and there are people who have farms, and there are people who have farm stores, but the combination of all the things interwoven together is unusual, and we sought the whole kind of country looking for models that we could, you know, not reinvent the wheel. We were looking for inspiration, and we found pieces of it, but it's a pretty unique model, and it's a really beautiful property to do it on. It fit what we wanted to do really well. So,
what about the other items that you have available? You're not there's an ocean nearby, but it's not quite at the edge of your property. There's meat, and you know, there's other things which make it to the table too. How do you handle that?
We have been farming for a while, so we have lots of neighbors who we know and have gone to market with, and you know, booths next to, and so we have friends who farm other things. So we do source in our little farm store local grass-fed beef and pork and chicken and lamb. And then we also have a relationship with Community Supported Fishery, which is a group of small boats out of Garibaldi, and they do line-caught sustainable seafood. So they bring us salmon, tuna, rockfish, and they have canned tuna as well, which is really nice. We know honey producers in the valley, so we have local honey. And then we also carry local wool from our neighbors here, Brian and Sage, at Middle Harvest Farm. So everything we could think of that you could be as a farm product that people might be seeking out, we try to include. And we do some value-added products ourselves. So we use our kitchen here to make pickles and sauce and jam and pesto with our farm products, so you could have them year-round.
To get, I don't know, philosophical with a small p maybe, what's the mission? What's the big statement behind this? What are you trying to do?
I think we're trying to showcase local food. We're trying to get people excited about eating healthy, and we're trying to build an economic base for local farms that encompasses tourism and visitors into that mix as it hasn't before. We really would love to see this whole visitor population that's pouring to the coast in the summer and year-round now from Portland experience directly local food and have it be on the farm. So it's not just this narrow strip of sand they're visiting, but really what the coast has to offer, which is an incredibly lush food environment and a lot of small and family farms, which is what we really excel in here. And to have that money go directly to those farmers where it could help the year-round local economy.
Well, there used to be so many dairy farms, and this is really returning the land to the purpose, maybe what it was originally intended, but somewhere along the way for the last 100-some years.
Yeah, it's a really nice mix. You know, I feel like more young people are getting involved in farming, and they don't really want these gigantic farms. They're more looking to have a small, diversified operation, and that's more affordable in terms of land access and capital, that they can afford a smaller parcel, and they might be interested in doing the full value-added experience. So instead of having maybe 100 cows, they would have, you know, 20 goats and milk them themselves and produce cheese and sell that cheese on their farm. And that model is really friendly to visitors and kids and things to engage with the farm, but it's also a more profitable model for a lot of young farmers and for local food. So that's kind of what we're looking at, is try to foster more of those experiences with our young farmers. We train young farmers as well on our farm. So we're trying to give them, put them into the community and give them ideas and give them some support as they move forward.
Well, you say you're training young farmers. Mm-hmm. My superficial impression, you know, is that would be an uphill sell these days.
You'd be surprised. There's actually a waiting list to get onto our farm.
I stand corrected. Great. And happily so.
And happily so. Exactly. It kind of surprised me too when I started, but there are so many young people who are looking to put their hands in the dirt. And I think the more technologically obsessed our culture becomes with phones and screens, there is a whole generation of people who just really want to understand basic skills and simplify their lives and get back to probably what their grandparents were doing, honestly. And, they come from all over the world. They're part of the Woofing organization. So it's Worldwide Opportunities on Organic Farms. And we have some of Australia and China. I mean, you can just pick your country. They've come and they'll stay for 2 weeks or a month and they live with us and they have the whole experience. They eat the food. And some of them will stay in the community. We've got a lot of them actually still living around here and doing their own farms. Some of them come back and become full-time employees for me. So the two I had as woofers a couple of years ago are now my farm managers. And so we created some jobs. We have three full-time employees on the farm. And now they're training other woofers. So it's been, and they're looking to start their own farm next year. So we really love to see that progression of, wow, I'm kind of interested. I have this complete, you know, free opportunity to be on a farm and engage with it. And then now I'm a little more serious and getting paid to do it. And then hopefully moving on to my own property. We also started the Nehalem Valley Farm Trust, which I'm a board member of. And that organization is a nonprofit that was kind of specifically designed to help that transition from just being an educational opportunity to now being an actual job opportunity.
Sounds like these folks may be sort of following from your roots and somebody who wandered into this, maybe had a casual interest, and the more they saw what was going on, the more they got pulled in. You're kind of an evangelist for this sort of thing.
You know, I'm not, actually. I try to warn them. I think I'm the opposite of the evangelist. I'm like, it's really hard. You don't make a lot of money.
You try to talk them out of it first.
I work all year long. I never get a break, that kind of thing. I just in your blood, I think in the old days, they used to say that families used to keep having kids until they had a farmer. It's something that's in you, and not everybody has it. But when you do and you connect with it, it's really... there's really nothing else you want to do. And I speak to that as well, as it's really a passion that even if someone said you won the lottery tomorrow, what would you do? The answer would usually be, well, I'd get a bigger farm, or I'd farm more, or, you know, the farming never leaves the picture. So it's really it's a calling, I'd say. And some young people just don't know they have it until they actually walk onto a farm and experience it.
Ginger Edwards is one of the founders of North Fork 53 on Highway 53, just on the... Clatsop County, Tillamook County borderline, and it's absolutely a glorious location. Ginger, when you think of the word or the term food desert, you tend to think of cities and, you know, neighborhoods in a city that just don't have a proper market that sells fresh or, you know, reasonably fresh and reasonably available and reasonably unprocessed if necessary food items. Seems to me, and that tends to be a city term, but, you know, as I hang around our area and beyond, there's just as many places in rural areas that seem to be, even with an agricultural base, tend to be food deserts.
It's true. That's very true. And I think the coast is getting better. When I first moved here 15 years ago, it was the case that many coastal villages had a small convenience store that was their main grocery store, and it didn't focus on fresh vegetables. You know, it focused on things that tourists would buy and eat immediately, like snacks. So it kind of felt similar to some of those inner city problems where you just have snack food and pop and things like that and not a lot of fresh vegetables. My first iteration of farm stand was that I had a little store in Manzanita, and I just put a table out in front of that, and I'd put vegetables from my garden onto it. And I was so surprised at how much people wanted them. I mean, that's what led to me helping to start the Manzanita Farmers Market, is because we didn't have a farmers market back then. And there really wasn't a good one nearby to Manzanita. There was one in Astoria that sold mostly other things and not as a lot of vegetables. And in Tillamook, which was similar, was not a very vegetable-heavy or food-heavy market. So that's changed. In the last 15 years or so, 10 years, so many markets have come online, which has been really wonderful. To see Pacific City has a market, Seaside has a market, Cannon Beach has a market, you know, Nesquen has a market now. I mean, it's incredible. It's wonderful. And yet, year-round, after those markets end, there's still a little bit of a dip in where you access that food. And that was the biggest question that I got as the market director for a long time was, where do we get this food after you guys close in September? And we were like, well, good luck with that. You know, we really didn't know. We couldn't send people directly to farms. It was just too complicated. But that's one of the reasons we made the farm store kind of a priority, to get that open and have it on the weekends, you know, year round. So we have local meat and seafood and vegetables, because we wanted something to tell people.
Well, have the local stores come on board to the extent that, that you're able to sell through them?
They have, and they're really receptive. There's more demand for our produce than we can keep up with, that's for sure. It's a problem, not on the demand side, but on the supply side. There's just not as many people farming vegetables. There's a lot of dairies, but, you know, wholesaling vegetables is hard. It's not as profitable as directly selling them to a customer through a market, and it's already a not super profitable, you know, business thing anyway. So it's hard for us to just wholesale. And that's what the grocery stores need. They need larger farms who are just wholesaling. So it's trickier. We do better with restaurants. So I think the local restaurant scene is picking up more local food, because they can pay a little bit higher price. But yeah, there's work to do.
And margins in grocery stores are so slight that
they've
got their problems to solve,
too. And the Manzanita Deli is an amazing customer of ours. They'll buy anything we have. You know, they've just made it really clear that they support local food. Mother Nature's grocery store is very supportive. And so it's not like they don't want it. I think it's just a matter of, you know, the consistent demand and the consistent supply. As a small farm, my priority would be to my CSA and my farmer's market first. And then the wholesaling's kind of, you know, if we have extra. And we don't have that much extra anymore, because now we have a better breakfast in the farm store. So we need more farmers. And that's been the other mission, is just train young farmers, try to help them access land, try to get them some access to capital to get started. And because we want more local food, we need it.
So that must start in the schools. Do you contact them or anything? Are they receptive at all, or they got their own programs, or they their own thoughts about it?
The school food programs, Food Roots in Tillamook, is doing a great job with that. They're kind of spearheading that. I would be loved to see more local food in school lunches, and for kids to be, you know, accessing local food. Again, there's a lot of work to do, but I think that the nonprofits, the North Coast Food Web in Astoria and Clatsop, and Food Roots in Tillamook are doing a pretty good job getting awareness around that. They are just hiring, I think, a full-time coordinator for just school and local food stuff, so that's great.
So if I go into to your store this time of year, what am I going to see?
Well, basically that list I read you for the CSA box,
yeah.
That's the vegetable list for the store as well. We actually, some of our CSA members have just elected to, instead of receive a box, they'll just come to the store and pick out what they want, which is another option, because not everybody eats everything. So when you send them a box, you have to be a really good cook. You have to go through and learn the recipes and just experiment with things like pak choy or Chinese cabbage, which maybe you don't eat. But really, if you're just not eating those, you could instead just come and pick out a whole bunch more spinach or a whole bunch more kale or carrots and get what you want. So that's the other option for people who are just wanting to get some local food.
Well, that gives me an opportunity to ask, if I'm shopping at your place or someplace else, what should I be looking for? I mean, you know, how do I tell, let's say, a good bunch of spinach from a so-so?
Well, I think if you're in our store, you don't have to worry about
that was a very good answer.
Pretty much, you're going to get a good bunch either way. You want to look for freshness. I mean, that's, you know, want to look for local. You want to look for organic. And if you're not getting it from a farmer and the farmer's market or our store or something like that, you just want to look for labels that indicate it was grown in Oregon, or if it was grown in the Pacific Northwest beyond that, or if it's organically grown. If you can't find that, I'd look for organic, because that's, again, probably going to be fresher. They don't handle as well, and for long shipping, you know, so they usually ship them faster and fresher, and all those are good indicators. But really, it's about as much as possible, especially in summer and spring, find your farmers, you know.
Well, it is encouraging. You can even go to a big supermarket and there's now large organic sections. Yeah. Having said that, should I entirely trust what I'm seeing there is what it says it is?
Oh, there's a debate about that, of course. We are not certified organic, I should say. We grow organically, but we are not certified. And I think that when you direct sell to your customer and you have a lot of integrity around your product, you don't need a third party to come in and certify you. But one of the reasons we're not certified is because the organic certification actually has a lot of loopholes in it. And we didn't really feel it was strong enough. I mean, we didn't really feel like it was stringent enough to go for, because it's expensive and it takes a lot of paperwork. So we weren't happy with the standard that's currently being offered for our farm.
What's a loophole?
I think organically grown is better than not organically grown. But I think some of the things that people aren't maybe aware of is just that you can be in a large scale organic producer and be producing a lot of baby spinach, maybe 80 acres of baby spinach in black plastic, and they get a single cut and they're using a lot of water and they're using a lot of plastic and a lot of resources. And I guess those are the kind of things for the USDA organic label that at our level, small organic local, we are considering a lot other factors besides just the technical, version of organic. We're considering like community resources and watersheds and waste production and jobs. And there's just a lot of other layers to it that we feel are more important than just having that USDA label. And also that, it's kind of a unfair burden to have the small organic farmer take on the same labeling costs and fees as a large producer, because it costs us a lot more per vegetable, basically. So there's kind of an unfair distribution of process there, I think, for farmers.
Well, you raise a whole other side of it. It's not just about producing it, but the footprint that it takes to actually produce the food. And that's something that you've got to keeps you up at night.
Yeah, it's I guess small and local is definitely your best bet when you are looking, if you're interested in trying to combat climate change and all that stuff. Just having this stuff shipped all over the place and packaged to the nines and produced with massive machineries and things like that. And I don't think there's anything wrong with scaling up, but I think that there is something about organic when it started that really held that principle of small scale and local, that it's starting to get lost as organic becomes more popular, which is great that it's more popular, but the demand meant that certain entities scaled up to meet that demand. And remember that organic is still only 1% of the market, of the food that is out there in the world, is still only 1% of the market. So it's such a small thing. So really, it's kind of crazy to even be talking about it. It's so big because it's not big. Most of the food we eat is not organic, and it's being sprayed with really intense stuff, and they don't have to label that at all or pay extra, to certify that they're not, what they're spraying is not causing you cancer. Yeah. So that's the other unfair, we feel like, to have the organic farmer have to go through this whole process just to claim that they're not doing bad things, and to have the big farmers kind of externalize all their costs and, produce, and often with subsidies that small farmers don't get. So the wages and the profit margins are different there. And that's when people look at organic and say, oh, it's so expensive. Well, it really does cost the producer a lot more to produce that.
I guess the takeaway message is know who you're buying it from and how it was made, be kind of the
absolutely
know
your farmer. That's the best place to start, for sure. And we're hoping that this place, Northrop 53, is a place where people can at least start that journey. They can meet one farmer, they can meet us, and then be inspired to go find their farmers in their communities when they go home.
Well, I'll say your website is a very good resource for that, because it not only just plugs your place, as you would expect, but it also points you in directions where people can just kind of expand their knowledge of what's available in the area.
Yeah, we want to do education is a big part of our mission. We want to share what we know and hopefully get people excited and then make it be fun too. It's not, it's not a boring or like honors thing to take on food. Food is fun. No matter what side of the political aisle you're on, no matter what your age, people can really, gather around and celebrate good eating. And when things taste better, everybody can experience that. Like, you don't have to believe in organic to understand that fresh spinach tastes better than spinach in a plastic box that was shipped from somewhere else. So.
Well, make it to the farm. But if you can't do that, check out North Fork 53. It's a great website, and it's a great source, and you're doing some good work here.
Thank you so much.
Our guest this morning on Neocony View, Ginger Edwards of North Fork 53. Thanks. This has been fun.
Thank you.
I think I'm hungry, too.
Good.
And we will see you next month on Neocony View.